From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a deeper look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the nation. Today On Deadline is looking to the stars and to the effects of this week's solar eclipse. Whether it be through the lens of a telescope, binoculars, your own eyes, or photos and videos shared online, we all really seem to love looking into the cosmos. And this week in particular brought an event in the sky that won't occur for another few decades. Portions of the United States witnessed a total solar eclipse. The moon passed in front of the sun, shrouding it in darkness. While the East Coast saw a total eclipse, the remainder of the U.S. was left with a partial eclipse. Millions of people traveled to the path of totality, the areas where the sun was totally covered, by car or air for an amazing sky show. In many places, the weather even did skygazers a favor and offered up clear skies. But just how unusual was this solar spectacle? In a nutshell, it's very rare. While NASA said that total solar eclipses actually happen once every 18 months or so, what's really rare is one occurring in the same spot. That only happens once every 400 years. So if your house was in the path of Monday's eclipse, it wouldn't be passed over again until the great, 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 great grandchildren of people alive today are wandering the Earth. To share more on how uncommon this event really was, Wayne State astronomer Ed Cackett joined Odyssey before the big day.
We have had eclipses, of course, before, and we will again. Is there a particular reason why this one seems to be striking a chord with people?
So there are partial solar eclipses that take place relatively frequently. But the rare thing about this is it's going to be a total solar eclipse in certain parts of the U.S. And that's quite rare. So the last time was 2017. The next time won't be for another 20 years that the lower 48 states see a total eclipse. So 2044 is the next time to see a total solar eclipse in the lower 48 states. So that's why people are getting super excited this time.
Now, why is it, since the sun clearly takes up a lot of the sky, why is it that the total eclipse can be seen better in some parts of the country than in other parts?
Yeah, so there's only a very narrow band. It's about 115 miles across, where the moon will completely block the sun. And that's when you get this effect of totality. So you need the alignment to be perfect, right? It's actually a cosmic bit of luck that the angular size of the moon is the same as the angular size of the sun. They're actually, physically, they're both rather different in size, and they're actually different distances from the Earth's course. But the angular size of the sky, the size that it appears, is exactly the same. And so this means that when the moon lines up just right, it can completely block out the light from the sun. But that only happens for a small region, as I said, about 115 miles across. If you're within that region, you get to see the full effects of totality. If you're outside that region, you get what's called a partial eclipse. And that's where only part of the moon is blocking the sun.
Do we still learn anything from a total eclipse?
Yeah, so what happens in a total eclipse, when the moon blocks the sun, it prevents all that bright light from the sun's surface coming to us. And what happens is we actually get to see what's called the sun's corona, the sun's atmosphere. And this light, if you're in the region of totality, this lights up. And we can't see the sun's corona from the ground without special instrumentation unless we're in a total solar eclipse. So actually, you know, there are scientists who are going to be launching balloons and launching sounding rockets to try and study the sun's atmosphere, the sun's corona, during a total solar eclipse.
The spooky event in the sky also had a massive impact, an economic one, for communities and businesses on the ground. Before the eclipse, Bulent Tamel, an assistant professor of practice in economics at the University of Texas at San Antonio, shared with Time magazine that he estimated the eclipse would result in $1.5 billion in tourism spending for places in the path of totality. When you think about it, this makes sense. Great American Eclipse, a site that tracks solar eclipses around the world, shared that upwards of 4 million people travel to see the event, which resulted in a huge boost in tourism funds in towns, cities, and areas where people were able to best see the event. Michael Zeiler, the publisher of that website we just mentioned, joined Odyssey to share why he and others follow eclipses.
Okay, but what is it about an eclipse that really has gotten you sort of hooked, I guess?
For a few minutes during the eclipse, it's like standing on an alien planet because it is so unlike anything else you've ever seen before. Daylight suddenly turns to darkness, and the most beautiful object in the sky, which revolves around us every single day, is hidden, invisible to us every day except for the precious minutes of the total solar eclipse. And what I'm speaking of is the sun's corona. It's like a delicate shimmering flower around the deep black hole of the moon, and it is such a dramatic sight, and each one is different, and so that's why we go back again and again to try and catch total solar eclipses.
How many people do you think go to your website and use it to go traveling all over the place to view solar eclipses?
Well, yesterday, 200,000 people visited our website, and we know on eclipse day, it's going to be probably somewhere between 5 and 10 million people is my estimate of how many people will go on the website. And they go there because we're known as the best source of accurate and informative eclipse maps. And we provide just a chock full of information from all different angles. For example, we've got specialized maps that tell you about where the traffic might be most concentrated, or where you can find the longest duration of the eclipse, or other fun things. For example, I made a special map showing all the zoos in the eclipse path because animals are known to have reactions to the eclipse. So if you want to do a science, visit a zoo and watch the animals. So we've got maps like that throughout our website.
It sounds like a lot of fun. Do you end up having a lot of wear and tear in your car?
Normally we fly to eclipses because we travel all over the world. But this time we're lucky that we can actually drive to this eclipse, but more typically we fly. Last year, we flew to Australia for an eclipse that lasted less than 1 minute in total duration. And just that 1 minute made that trip so worth it because the corona was very spectacular that day. We saw some amazing prominences and some other features in the corona. So just a minute or so it is enough to make it. And we've been to places like the Arctic, to the equatorial rainforest in Africa, to the Atacama Desert in Chile. We've been all over to chase this most spectacular sight.
Now that the eclipse is done, astronomers and stargazers are looking for the next great astronomical event. Why? Because we can't get enough. Here's a taste of what we should expect next. A new super digital camera that is the largest ever built will help astronomers peer even further into the cosmos, and they're sure to bring us new revelations. This camera took nearly 2 decades to construct, and it included help from a team of scientists and engineers at the U.S. Department of Energy's Stanford Linear Accelerator Center National Accelerator Laboratory. Say that 5 times fast. Now the Legacy Survey of Space and Time, or LSST, camera, which is about the size of a small car, has a whopping 3,200 megapixels, and it'll be put to use soon. To share more on the camera and how astronomers will utilize it to study the stars, Travis Lang, the deputy project manager for the LSST camera, joined Odyssey.
Let's start with how big is this camera and how far into the universe can it see?
Yeah, I mean, the scale of this camera is quite large. So, you know, physically, when you stand next to it, it's a little over 5 feet in diameter. It's about 10 feet long, and it weighs, you know, roughly 6,000 pounds. So it's quite a big camera compared to your ordinary SLR.
So what are you looking for with this camera? What do you hope to see out there in the universe?
You know, we are looking for pretty much everything. It is a survey telescope, so this is a camera that goes on the telescope. So the combination, we are looking at all of the sky. So it'll take large images. It'll repeat that large image every, you know, roughly 30 seconds or so. And it will continue to do that all night long, every night, for roughly 10 years. And it builds up a three-dimensional movie of the universe, if you will. And so we can look at things that are, you know, way back in time, things that are slow progressing. You know, most things that occur in the universe take a long time for them to develop. But there are also things that are quite quick, you know, quite fast, relatively. So things that are in our solar system, you know, we have the interstellar objects like asteroids and comets that are coming through. So we can see those in real time. And so there's kind of a twofold thing that we're looking at here. So things that are slow and things that are also quite fast.
Why only a 10-year lifespan on this?
You know, that is what we have funding for, right? So we have there's a funding element that goes along with doing science. So we build it. All of our requirements we set up for 15 years, actually. But the current funding is for 10 years. We hope that at some point in the future, somebody will find money to continue the survey for longer than just the 10 years. But 10 years is kind of a minimum that's required in order to build up enough information for this to do the science that we need.
I was curious if by the time something like this is developed and it's put into use, just knowing how fast science and technology progresses, is it already almost obsolete because there's something bigger and better coming up right behind this?
Not that we're aware of. You know, for building a visible wavelength camera of this scale, there are a lot of challenges that get really difficult when you try to go even larger than this. Things like making that lens, right? The front lens that's on the camera is, you know, over 5 feet in diameter and is the largest lens, a transmissive lens in the world. It's very difficult to manufacture something like that. And to go even larger would be, you know, even more difficult. So we're not aware of anybody trying to make a camera of this scale. In future yet.
If you could choose one thing you hope to discover out there, what would that be?
You know, I'm really looking forward to the increased knowledge of our own solar system, right? This is the closest thing that we have to home, and yet we don't know all that much about it, right? There's a lot of objects out there in the world, in our solar system, that we are going to find, and I'm looking forward to those discoveries.
With today's science, we understand the mechanics that caused this week's solar eclipse, but we can't help but wonder about ancient civilizations and what they made of it. Wasn't it terrifying? Smithsonian science correspondent Dan Falk said it's safe to assume it was frightening, awe-inspiring, and probably seen as an omen. Think about how high the stakes were in ancient times, he said, because, quote, if you're not sure that the sun is coming back, that's a pretty intense thing to worry about. Today, it's an opportunity to remind ourselves about the power of the universe, how small we are, and how far we've come. We also have to ask, where are we going? To some extent, it's anyone's guess. Scientists do know that solar eclipses will stop happening on Earth at some point, since the moon is gradually moving farther away from us. Eventually, its shadow won't reach the Earth. Luckily, we have another 563 million years before that happens, according to NASA. And where will we be by then? Who knows? With the privatization of the space industry, maybe we'll be watching the Earth from the moon, or from Mars. Until then, take some advice from us here at On Deadline. Enjoy every magical, mystical, awe-inspiring phenomenon in our skies that you can. This show is produced by Joe Heady, Christy Strouser, and Myron Kaplan. And by me. I'm Lauren Barry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.